Blog Talk Radio.
Beautiful mess, and sometimes it gets out of control. But the beauty I see in you is worth more than diamonds and gold. I never seen God face to face, but this has gotta be close. With ceaseless joy, I plant seeds of love inside of your soul. Whatever I can do in your life to play a positive role. My life gave me water, I took my time to shower your soul. I hope flowers would grow. Whatever I can do in your life to play a positive role. I stay by your side through the highs and moderate lows. Life is such a beautiful mess, and sometimes it gets out of control. But if you water the seeds of pain with love, flowers will grow. Whatever you choose to do in life, play a positive role. Always chase the sun and sunflower your soul. I've never seen God face to face, but this has gotta be close. The beauty I see in us is worth more than diamonds and gold. With ceaseless joy, I plant seeds of love inside of your soul. My life gave me water, I took the time to shower your soul. I knew flowers would grow. I knew flowers would grow. I knew flowers would grow. When life gives you water, help her grow. Help her grow. Help her grow. Life gives you water. Help her grow. Help her grow.
Fighting your foot is a battle you're never ever going to win either.
Because once you try and fight one thought, another one comes, and then another one comes, and then another one comes. You're going to lose every single time, because the more you resist, the more it persists. You see, deep divers, I've learned that it's not about fighting your thoughts, it's about surrendering to them. Then all of a sudden, they don't bother you anymore. Oh my gosh, it's like magic. Yes, it is. Peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Beautiful deep divers. We are out here in the heart of nature, baby. We got beautiful birds up there, cat down the road over there. I'm just, woo, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Sending you tons of good ass energy today, deep divers. Take that, take that, take that. Fighting your thoughts. Are you fighting your thoughts right now? Is your mind cluttered with junk? Are you at war with yourself? Has your mind become your enemy? I've got a question that came to me They're like, Ralph, I know you're a psychologist. What is the best way I can stop fighting? Because it seems like I'm in a mind battlefield, Ralph. It seems like my thoughts are going against me, Ralph, and I don't know what to do. How do we silence the mind? We got a whole lot to talk about, deep divers, and we ain't even had breakfast yet. Can I get a hello? Okay. So let me share with you what's helped me along my journey to silence my mind, to stop fighting with my thoughts, to basically go on a mind detox. Deep divers, anytime you have a thought, you are making an energetic purchase in the universe store. There are many things, many items you can buy. Some thoughts feel good. Some thoughts feel bad. And in this store, deep divers, you can always get a refund, okay? A lot of people buy things they don't need. A lot of people think thoughts they don't need. So they collect a lot of garbage, junk, stuff. And this is why so many people are at war with their mind, because they have collected unnecessary things which now burden them. So we have to learn how to not collect, to learn how to not purchase things we don't need. We have to learn how to think thoughts which only serve us. Deep divers, inside of your brain, inside of your mind, you have a monkey. In the Buddhist tradition, they call this the monkey mind. And this monkey never, ever sleeps. Deep divers is always up and is very easily distracted. I've got a monkey mind, so do you. And this is that chit-chatter inside of your mind. And you're like, hey, be quiet. No, the more you do that, the more the monkey makes more noise, creates more havoc, and breeds more chaos within you. So how do you silence this monkey mind is the question. You give it a banana, deep divers. You let the monkey mind make as much noise as it wants. What? Slow motion this side. You see, many times we can't silence the mind because we are trying to shut up the mind. We are trying to say, hey, mind, only think positive thoughts. Hey, mind, do not think those kind of thoughts. Once again, resistance makes stronger. What you resist persists. So when you allow the monkey mind to make as much noise as it wants, eventually it will tire itself out and get tired and then go to sleep. So now you can get some sleep, deep divers. There are no good or bad thoughts, deep divers. There are no good or bad thoughts. When you are neutral, you will now go on a mind detox. When you are neutral, you will now learn how to free your mind. You will now learn how to stop fighting with your mind when you are neutral. When you stop living in duality of this is good, there are only thoughts, deep divers. There are only thoughts and your attitude towards your thoughts. Like, your good thought could be my bad thought. My bad thought could be your good thought, okay? Attachment. This is why so many people are in pain because of their thoughts. It's not the thought. It's the emotion you attach to the thought that causes you pain. Therefore, we have to remind ourselves, we are not our thoughts. Oh, baby, we are the observer behind them. What? Oh, my God. slow motion this time. You are not.
I apologize for the ads, guys. You know, they try anything to throw anyone off of their, you know, game. So I apologize. World Rising. Hold on, let me see the back. Nah, it's going to be another ad. They always play. But World Rising, everybody. World Rising. This is another podcast of World Rising Information, y'all. I am your host, Haru the 7th Oracle. And today I thought it was very important to come on and to, you know, get our thoughts, because I feel myself, I'm challenged. You know, there is people projecting their realities and their fears and their animosities and their, you know, it's a real thing. You know, energy transfer is very, very real. And as I'm healing a lot of stuff, and mind you, I'm not in a healing place that, you know, I am suffering or I'm not in a healing place as far as a low vibratory aspect is concerned. Normally I come in after the lecture, guys. But the way that this is set up today, you know, the way that it happens here at Ears is, you know, we are not scripted or anything like that. So but energy transfer is real, but it's not just with sex. You know, it is truly, you know, just by a simple thought or just by a simple suggestion. You know what I'm saying? I had noticed something yesterday, and Enhancing Awareness Radio also, you guys, is a big-ass classroom, okay? And in these lectures, guys, some of the lectures I had not listened to, you know, and like I said, this is not really scripted. You know what I mean? I have a routine, but it's really not scripted. So I'm learning with you guys. You know what I mean? I'm learning. We're growing together. You know, growing pains, right? We don't go through shit. We grow through shit. And here at Enhancing Awareness Radio, we grow together. So with that being said, I had learned something yesterday. You know, I was like, okay, I always said that we live in a holographic universe, but that's like a concrete answer. That's a concrete response as far as, but Michael Talbert, you know, he was on a lecture yesterday that I had pulled. Go back and listen to the lecture. It was great about the holographic universe, about the world being fake and all this stuff. It was really, really good yesterday. But I learned something in his lecture. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one too, because that one was good. But in his lecture yesterday, he said, it is suggested that, you know, this is a holographic universe. And when I do my sessions, I tell people, you know, this is just me suggesting to you. In my readings, I always say this is a suggestion, because I learned a long time ago that one of my counselors was like, I don't give advice, I give suggestions. Because when you give advice, it's kind of like you telling people what they need to do or what they should do. But if you suggest to them, you know what I'm saying, it's and I think they teach that emotional manipulation as well. So it can go either way. But, you know, guys, people projecting their realities onto you is the all-time high. But what's most important is, what is the subconscious thoughts that flow through our mind? I guess I may include the subconscious thought lecture in here too. But your subconscious mind is very important. So please be mindful of your subconscious mind. But how to change negative thoughts. Negative thoughts can be on autopilot, you guys. You can't even, you ever been just driving in traffic and you're already pissed off about traffic, but you just start thinking about everything. Oh, my God, my baby's sick. Oh, my God, my baby daddy cheating on me. Oh, my God, you know, my mother, she's just being a bitch. Or, you know, my dad, he's doing this or he's doing that and he's being manipulative. You know, just anything, you know what I'm saying, to just take you off your square, it comes from your mind. You know what I mean? So I teach people, and if you want to book a session with me, guys, please check my link tree in the show notes. All my information to contact me is in my show notes. I have a lot of amazing ebooks too, to start you off on your spiritual journey. You know, I give those books away, guys. I don't charge anything. The website, my website, you guys, is going to be coming back up. All right, I am going to revamp my website. Yep. So the ebooks are going to be available through my website, is what I'm trying to tell y'all. So I'm going to bring that back. The ebooks, most of them will be free, but the more in-depth ones, probably like $2 or $3, you guys, you know. So if you want to make a donation to EAR, you're also welcome to do that at any time. Yeah, everything's in the show notes, guys. It's called a tip jar. So if you want to leave us a tip or anything like that, please check out the archives. But, yes, guys, so changing your thoughts, changing your life is going to be the lecture that we use today, guys. A good method, you know, when you're in that, is to picture a stop sign and just tell your mind, stop, stop, stop it. You know, like literally, when you just thinking about negativity, you know, because a lot of us, we wake up with negativity, you know, but here's the thing, it's a subconscious program that's been programmed into you to do so, you know what I mean? So in order to rewrite your story, guys, to do these subtle things like changing your thoughts, changing your life, all right? So that's what we're going to, that's what we're here, this Royal Rising, that's what we're discussing today, all right? So I'll be back in periodically, and most importantly, to close out the podcast, but yeah, just listen to some of these tips, guys, it'll help you.
You are not your thoughts. You are not your thoughts. This is how to silence the mind. You are just experiencing your thoughts for a brief moment in time, but you are not your thoughts. Just like a guitar is playing a song, the song is not the guitar. The guitar can play a sad song and then a happy song. Just like you can have a sad thought, then a happy one. I want to remind you, deep divers, when you learn detachment from your thoughts, you will now go on a mind detox. You will now learn how to stop fighting with your mind when you learn how to be detached from what you are thinking about. I learned it, deep divers, and it does wonders. You see, the reason why so many people have a problem with their mind is because they're not in their heart space. They've put the mind, the ego, in the driver's seat and the heart. No. Deep divers, you've got to put the heart in the driver's seat and the ego in the boot. In the trunk of the car, deep divers. Just like the great Osho said, the mind is a beautiful servant, but a dangerous master. So, to silence your mind, stop feeding your lower nature in this matrix. The mind always wants attention. The heart doesn't need attention because it has its own love. If you are someone who is constantly overthinking, constantly ruminating. When I was in university, deep diver, studying psychology, the lecturer introduced me to a great psychologist by the name of Fritz Perl. He was a badass, deep diver. He said that you have to lose your mind and come to your senses. What? Slow motion this side. You have to lose your mind and come to your senses. We lose our minds by realizing we are not our minds, also by learning to stop identifying ourselves with every single thought we have. We are not what we are thinking. We are not our emotions. Even. We're just experiencing them. So when you learn how to stop judging how you feel, you will free yourself. You will free your mind. You will go on a mind detox. You will stop fighting with your thoughts when you allow them. Key word, allow them. Allow yourself to think a real.
Your new home needs more than just paint.
Really negative thought. allow yourself to think of all of those nasty thoughts until you become immune to them, because you aren't them. There are no good or bad thoughts, only thoughts. Be in the middle, deep diver. Stop judging how you feel. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be happy. Is that how you're feeling present moment? 7-day vegan challenge. Now, talking about the 7-day vegan challenge, shout out to everybody who's going plant-based. There's a great Zen story. A student asked the Zen master, "Master, how can I find enlightenment?" And he replied, "Just chew your food." What? Slow motion this side. You see, because a lot of us, we're not even chewing our food. We're talking to someone else over there and over there and looking at our phone. We're not really just chewing. We're not really just focusing on our plate. So this is what's helped me to stop fighting with my thoughts, to really be in the here and now, which means when I'm eating a delicious bananas inside and chia seeds and hazelnuts and pecans, I'm just doing that, okay? Be divers. Be in the now. This is how you free your mind from all of that clutter, the distraction, the noise, is to immerse yourself in the present moment, just like a child. You heard that song, The Message. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. You got to be in the now. You got to be so focused that all you see right now is just your nose. You have to be in the now, because the reason why people are fighting with their minds, fighting with their thoughts, is because they're somewhere in the past or they're somewhere in the future. They're never rooted in the here and now. This is where the power is, deep divers. This is how to stop fighting with your thoughts. Learn how to be as present as you can. A great way to do this is to come into nature. Come and meet Ralph Smart, deep divers. Look at a flower. Look at a tree. Look at a butterfly over there. Just pay attention. Pay attention to what's happening right now. Not yesterday, no, right now. Not tomorrow, no, right now. Deep divers. And lose your mind and come to your senses. I do this by having a mind shower. How do I have a mind shower? By cleansing what's in my mind. By washing it away. Just like you take a bath, deep divers, you've got to give your mind a bath, okay? How do I do this in a practical way? By taking a break from social media. Take a break from Instagram, for goodness sake, deep divers. Don't worry, it's not going anywhere. Take a technology fast. Do something good for yourself for once. Because a lot of people are caught up in the mind because they're always comparing themselves to other people. Comparison is the greatest thief of joy, but also it locks you into the ego. Now, how does your mind become stronger than your heart? When you feed your mind, you have to learn how to starve your ego and nourish your heart. What? Slow motion this side. This is how to stop fighting with your thoughts. This is how to silence your mind. This is how to not make your mind your enemy. Starve your ego and nourish your heart. Your mind is not a bad thing. It's just that it's supposed to be a servant to you. The mind is the lower nature. The heart is the higher nature. The lower should serve the higher. Listen, deep divers. What really freed me along my journey to silence my mind is to realize that my mind is not me. I am not Sona. I'm not who I think I am. Who were you before the world told you who you were? Who were you before society told you who you were? That is who you should strive to be. In other words, be authentic. Let go of society's expectations. This is how to stop fighting with your mind. Make friends with your mind. Make your mind your ally, not your enemy. Remind yourself, deep divers, your mind should always be a servant to you. It should never be your master. It should never tell you what to do. Your heart should always be the guide. Let love guide you, not fear. And once you realize that, deep divers, well, you'll just say, feels so good to be alive, baby. Can I get a hello? Beautiful, deep divers. I'm just, woo, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Shout out to everybody who's been getting the wonderful good ass prana shirt at ralphsmart.com/clothes. Got a question for me, deep divers? Add me on the verified Instagram page at official Ralph Smart and on Facebook at Ralph Smart. And if you want to model the Infinite Waters clothing, the Infinite Waters clothing, add me on Instagram. Tell me why you have what it takes if you're a sexy ass model. Woo! With a whole lot of heart. Check out the new book, Deep Divers, for more empowering information like this. Feel Alive by Ralph Smart on Amazon. Have a beautiful day, deep divers, freeing that mind. Peace. Infinite waters, diving deep. Once again, stay well, stay healthy, peace. But to lose your mind,
I'm just going
come to your senses.
I got a fine peace of mind. I know they're not recording. I got a fine peace of mind.
Is what that voice in your head says when you try to get peace of mind.
I gotta find peace of mind. I gotta find peace of mind. He says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. He says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. He says there's no me without him. Please help me forget about him. He takes all my energy, trapped in my memory, constantly holding me, constantly holding me. I need to tell you all the pain he's caused. Mm-hmm. I need to tell you why I'm undone because he says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. He says it's impossible without him, but I know it's possible. Not based on ownership, I trust every part of you, 'cause all that you say you do. You love me despite myself. Sometimes I fight myself. I just can't believe that you would have anything to do with someone so insecure, someone so immature. Oh, you inspire me to be the higher me. You make my desire pure. You make my desire pure. Just tell me what to say. I can't find a word to say. Please don't be mad with me. I have no identity. All that I've known is gone. All I was building on. I wanna walk with you. How do I talk to you? Touch my mouth with your hands. Touch my mouth with your hands. Oh, I wanna.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right, guys. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. Welcome back. All right, so Ralph Smart, pretty much Infinite Waters on YouTube, guys. I'll include the lecture for today also in the show notes for you guys to go and research and do your own research, right? But thank you. You know, I just had a thought. You know, when it comes to people in your life, you know, we have to really, I like to do what I call a self-evaluation checklist. You know, does this person, how do I feel when this person is in my energy? You know what I mean? Do I feel high energy? You know, do I feel low energy? Is this person in some way, I don't care if it's a feeling on their part or anything like that, empaths, we can feel it. You know what I'm saying? So whatever anybody is trying to project onto you on a subconscious level, in this energy space, you are now able to pick it up. And this is not just a chosen one. This is anybody should be able to pick it up. So what I do is a self-evaluation check. You know, inconsistency. How do I feel when you are in my energy space? Is it a union to where, you know, we're giving and taking, you know, always giving and taking, or is it something that we're marrying together in order to, you know, blossom into whatever bigger, grander scheme of things maybe? Or are you taking away from me? You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of energy vampires that we should be aware of. So, you know what? Before I go into lecture, because the lecture is an hour and something long, so let me see if I can find, because now, most of all your thoughts and everything, change your thoughts, change your life, this is going to be on an internal level, okay? Because at Ear Guys, we always teach that all of this shit is going to bring you back to you. But let's listen to Energy Vampires. I hadn't listened to this one in a while, so let's see. I think this is Ralph.
Peace. Infinite waters diving deep once again. We are out here in nature, baby. We got the birds up there. Gorgeous day today. 10 secret ways to crush an energy vampire. We're about to dive real deep, deep divers. Let's just, woo, breathing in that good ass prana, baby. So I got a question that came in from someone asking how to deal with energy vampires. This person keeps bumping into energy vampires and they don't know what to do right now. It's gotten beyond the joke right now. So an energy vampire is someone who drains your energy, sometimes without you even knowing. So an energy vampire would be like this. They're here, they would creep up on you like this, and you would be like here, just minding your own business as you do. And all of a sudden you'll be like, where did my energy just go? And they'll be like, here, I took it. And you'll be like, here, where did my energy just go? We ain't even had breakfast yet. Can I get a hello? Let me share with you what's helped me along my journey. Deal with energy vampires. Sometimes we're around people and they drain our energy. So how do I protect myself? The first secret way to crush an energy vampire is to blind them with your light. That's it. It's that simple. Blind them with your light. So do you remember Count Dracula? Vampires only come out at night. They can't handle sunlight. They don't come out during the day. So blind them with your light. Slow motion this side. Now that's a metaphor. Sometimes we are around friends, even family, and we tell them our dreams and they just laugh. That's never going to happen. That is a subtle form of energy vampirism, because now it's like you feel a bit drained after being around them, right? Shine even brighter. I'm here to tell you, that's what you got to do. blind energy vampires with your light. Forget about the people who don't believe in your dream. Focus on the people who actually do. And shine even brighter until they're like, oh my gosh, and have no choice but to duck down. Too much light, baby. Too much light. They are now nowhere to be seen. Did you see one? No. What is the second secret way to crush an energy vampire? Now, let's be honest. We all have been energy vampires sometimes without even knowing. Do you talk a lot sometimes when you're around people but forget to listen? You just mouthing off and they're just listening to what you have to say. They can't even get a word in. Yes, what I've realized along my journey is that sometimes that is what energy vampires do. They cramp your style. They invade your space. Sometimes they just talk and talk and talk, and they never allow you to talk because you don't matter. So when we're finished talking with them, we're like, where did my energy just go? But that was their plan all along, right? So learn to say no when you want to say no, and learn to say yes when you want to say yes, and learn to say bye when you want to leave that conversation. And talk when you really want to talk. When you create healthy energetic boundaries, now you start protecting yourself against energy vampires. Because now you realize this secret, that energy vampires can only live off the energy you give them. But more so, energy vampires can only live off the attention that you give them. Slow motion this side. So if there is someone in your life who, whenever they come around you, you just feel awfully tired and drained and exasperated, well, you got to ask yourself, maybe, what am I doing here, first of all? And then say to yourself, why don't I limit my time with them? I don't have to be around them 24/7 if I feel my energy is getting drained. So when you begin to limit your time around certain people who you feel are draining your energy, then energy vampires are nowhere to be seen, because now you are now surrounding yourself with people who raise you higher, who you feel elevated around. You get more energy from them and they get more energy from you. It's a mutual exchange of harmonious energy, baby. What is the third secret way to crush an energy vampire? 7-day vegan challenge. Shout out to everybody on Snapchat who has been sending me what they are eating, getting inspired by the 7-day vegan challenge. Got some mangoes, papaya, avocados, right? I shared a strawberry banana smoothie, and you also shared one. Great. Now, energy vampires don't only appear in the form of people. Oh no, they also appear in the form of foods. Have you ever eaten something and just felt immediately drained? You're like, oh my gosh, where did my energy just go? Right? That's a form of subtle energy vampirism. Sometimes we are eating refined white sugar, table salt, all of these foods which are known to cause cancer. They're not doing anything for us. And in fact, they are robbing our healthy cells of the energy. So that is a form of energy vampirism. slow motion this side. Now, I've been a vegan for over 13 years, and I've realized that eating a plant-based diet, when you are eating foods with live enzymes, you now get so much back from the foods. You don't feel your energy being zapped out of you. Instead, you feel more energy coming back to you. So you feel so charged up. So it even starts with the kinds of foods we are eating. You are what you eat. Once you are eating right, once you are eating to live, energy vampires, nowhere in sight. What is the fourth amazing way to crush an energy vampire? Realize this, that it is all a choice. Nobody is forcing you to hang around with anybody you don't want to be around. You are consciously choosing to say, actually, I'm going to surround myself with this person. Sometimes, I get it, we don't know they are going to drain our energy down the line, but sometimes we actually do. Because even I, along my early journey, I would hang around certain people and know that they didn't really give me anything. They would actually make me really tired. But I chose to be around them. We become like the people we become like the people we surround ourselves with most often. So sometimes you gotta realize you gotta take responsibility, which means responding to your ability. Slow motion this side. The more responsibility you take, you'll realize actually it's not the energy vampire's problem. I have a part to play in this because I am choosing to invest my energy in that person and be around them. I don't have to do that. So you have power. You aren't entirely the victim here. What is the fifth secret way to crush an energy vampire? Stop people pleasing. Are you someone who loves to people please? Energy vampires feed off you people pleasing them, right? Kissing their butt. Sometimes you might be at work and you're people pleasing, right? Sometimes that's how energy vampires work. They know you are a people pleaser and they get you to people please even more. So stop people pleasing. Start being authentic. Start getting that clarity to know what you want in life and realize that, look, just because you don't want to do something, it doesn't make you a bad person. We have to take responsibility to say, actually, sometimes we just want to be loved. We just want to be accepted. So we people please, hoping that we can fit in, not realizing the other person may be an energy vampire. So to take back our power, it's not about getting everybody to like you. It's about how you see yourself, but more so asking yourself, am I staying true to myself in this present moment? That is the only thing that matters. And then energy vampires will no longer bother you. Like, where do they go? Nowhere to be seen. What is the sixth way, secret way to crush an energy vampire? Be proud of who you are. And it's hard sometimes because in our society, we are made to feel so bad about everything, right? No, because it's time to start taking responsibility to realize actually you are good enough. And the more proud you are of yourself, people can't belittle you. They can't put you down because many times energy vampires work by tearing you down to lift themselves up. So the more you realize that and watch out for that, the more you start honoring yourself, you're proud of yourself, you got the confidence right now, energy vampires can no longer affect you. In fact, when they see you, they start running. Woo! Nowhere to be seen. What is the seventh secret way to crush an energy vampire? Stop feeding into them. Many times we are around people and we feed into them. We feed into them through our thoughts. We pay them all our attention. We sometimes feed into the fear. We're around certain people and we feed into them by giving them our energy. Once again, we are choosing to give them our energy. Now, I've realized this, that once you take away the food from an energy vampire, once you take away the food from an energy vampire, once it can't eat, it's got to starve, right? So you want to take away the food. Stop feeding into certain people. What is the 8th secret way to crush an energy vampire? Don't endlessly argue with them. Sometimes, like, can we just chill out? We can just chill out. We can just do that, right? Okay. Because energy vampires sometimes like to press your buttons. They like to get on your nerves because they want you to argue with them. Through arguing with them, you are now once again feeding them. That's how they get full. That's how they get your energy. So when you stop arguing with them, there is no food for them, and now they have to starve. Slow motion this side. So that's really what I love to do along my journey, is to realize that I'm not just going to argue with people for the sake of arguing with them. I'm all about elevation, and sometimes, yes, you got to express yourself, but also you got to learn how to keep those boundaries, to say, if I'm arguing with someone, it means I'm going to be on the same frequency as them. To rise above it, you got to start changing your vibrational frequency, right? What is the 9th secret way to crush an energy vampire? Stop gossiping. And I had to learn this along my early journey, that that's what energy vampires love. Sometimes someone might tell you something and you go and tell someone else. Gossip and drama, right? And now it's like a soap opera, right? Because once again, this is energy which is very low vibrational. And this is what energy vampires love. He say, she say, right? So I eliminated all gossip and drama out of my life many, 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 many years ago. So I'm living a more stress-free life. And once you do that, you realize, once again, there is no food for these energy vampires. Because energy vampires love gossip, they love drama, they love commotion. And once you're not about that, well, they are nowhere to be seen. And what is the 10th secret way to crush an energy vampire? Pay them no attention. So we say paying attention because we don't even realize when you are paying someone attention, you are actually making a mental transaction to them. Slow motion this side. So stop paying people attention that you're not really interested in. You don't really care for them too much. They don't really care for you too much. They don't have your best interest at hand. Don't pay them any attention and they will no longer affect you. Pay people attention who inspire you, who have helped you along your journey. Those are the people who deserve your attention. Those are the people who are worthy for your attention, not people who drain your energy. And the moment I learned this secret, stop paying attention to people who really don't even deserve my energy, life became a whole lot better. And there were no more energy vampires in sight. And then I just said, feels so good to be alive, baby. Can I get a hello? And there you have it. We are out here. Woo! Breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Have a beautiful day, deep divers. Infinite waters. Diving deep. Once again, stay well. Stay healthy. Peace. You!
2 Can we have 2 a.m. conversations under the starlights? Leaving all negativity at home and know that everything gonna be alright. As long as we have each other in our life, can we not label anything as ridiculous and just let our thoughts be endless? Can we manifest this moment in infinite? Abundance. I am worthy of abundance in my life. I appreciate the riches of my life that are always available to me. I believe in the eternal, boundless abundance of the universe. I choose to see a world of abundance and unlimited potential. I create unlimited abundance in my life. I deserve to receive great abundance in my life. I give thanks for the abundance in my life at this moment. I inspire abundant thinking in others. I know that the universe is infinitely abundant. I live in a rich and abundant universe. I know that there's more than enough to go around. I mentally, emotionally welcome abundance into my life. I naturally attract divine abundance into my life. I now have prosperity and abundance in all areas of my life. I now have surplus in all areas of my life. I readily accept the abundance that is my birthright. I receive more abundance each day. I receive more abundance each day, more than I can ever imagine. I see my life as it is meant to be, abundant and prosperous. I see my life as it is meant to be, abundant and vital. I welcome abundance into all areas of my life. Abundance is appropriate for me. The unlimited abundance of the universe flows into my life every day. There is a constant stream of abundance in my life. There is great abundance in all areas of my life. There is growing abundance in every area of my life. Abundance in all areas of my life. Today I bless my being with limitless abundance. Today I reclaim the abundance that is my universal birthright. Today I see and feel great abundance life has to offer. With every breath I take, I bring more and more abundance. into my life.
Bring more and more brightness into my life.
But never come to the full realization of the soul inside. Being blinded by misconceptions like complexion, with the perception that we have third open eyes. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you and I these physical bodies.
Being blinded by misconceptions like complexion, with the perception that we have third open eyes. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you and I these physical bodies. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you and I.
Energy vampires, you know, very, very, very important. All right, so let's go ahead and hop into this Wayne Dyer lecture, guys. You guys will love this one. But change your thoughts, change your life, all right? So, yeah, so let's go ahead and hop into it. This one helped me a lot in my journey. Hope it's not
what if I tell you?
Yeah, I want to apologize in advance for the ads, guys, because y'all know how it is. when you are growing and learning, you know, everything in this life, a lot of things in this life seem to be a distraction. So, you know, we work through it. We grow through it, right? All right, guys, change your thoughts, change your life. This lecture is 1 hour and 30 minutes long, okay? So I'll be back to discuss or probably in and out. So y'all know how I go. Y'all know how I roll here. All right.
Thank you so much. It's so, so wonderful to be back on public television. It's now 10 years we've been creating public television programs. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I obviously support public television. It's a way to bring higher consciousness to our entire country. And I'm proud and pleased to be here. This is a program about changing your life. Not in the traditional way that we think of when we think about changing our lives. Usually that means changing your behaviors, retraining yourself, getting new habits, going out and trying them out and changing your life. This is about changing your thoughts, and then your life will change. Change your thoughts, change your life. It's the name of this program. It's the name of the book. It is something that I very, very strongly endorse, that we have within us the ability and the capacity, through the way that we use our minds and the way that we process things and events, to make our lives totally shift and change around. And I can tell you that it doesn't make any difference what age you are, whether you're a teenager watching this, or whether you're someone in your 60s, 70s, 80s, or anywhere along the way, you can make that change. And I'll tell you, it happened for me. 2 years ago, on the 10th of May, I turned 65. And the next day, on the 11th of May, I had a life-changing thing take place for me. I changed the way that I was thinking about who I am, about what kind of a man I am, about what kind of a person I intend to be for the rest of my life and where I'm going. And something began to resonate with me that I had to make a shift and make a change. At the age of 65, I had a wonderful office, which was really a townhouse. It was filled with over 20,000 books. It was filled with clothing. It was filled with records of all kinds. It had pictures on the wall. I had awards that I had received over the years, and everything that I had accumulated, literally, in this physical world, had accumulated in that office. I turned the key and handed it to my manager, Maya, who's been with me for almost 30 years, and I said, I would like you to sell everything or distribute everything that's in there. Sell the townhouse, get rid of it, take all the records, all the books. I got rid of my shoes. And I left it all behind and turned it over to her to get rid of everything. I detached myself from a lifetime of accumulation. And I moved full-time to a place over in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on one of our great islands called Maui. And in the next month, I began to get a lot of things coming to me about what my life was to what was to unfold, things that I wasn't even expecting. And I think about this idea about what age you are and whether or not changes and shifts can be made, and how difficult so many people attribute this to. They say, that's an impossibility. I couldn't possibly do that. I'm so attached to all of these things. Or I'm too old. I've been living in the same place too long, whatever it might be. Right here in this audience is one of the women that I revere, I think more than any other woman I can think of in the professional world. At the age of 60, she changed her thoughts, and her life changed dramatically. She started a publishing company called Hay House, which is one of the world's largest publishers of spiritual and higher consciousness materials. She wrote a book called You Can Heal Your Life. She's here today. Her name is Louise. Hey, Louise, would you stand up and be there? Louise, with a great number of people from all over the world, just celebrated her 80th birthday. So I should look so good even at 60, all right? And I'm just so deeply honored that you're here. Thank you. What happened for me in the next few months was absolutely life-changing. I had a friend tell me who was severely addicted to all kinds of drugs and alcohol, who was basically very close to death. He refused all kinds of treatment. He wouldn't go through the programs and so on. But he read a book. And the book was called The Tao Te Ching, The Tao Te Ching, T-A-O-T-E-C-H-I-N-G, Tao Te Ching. Tao in ancient Chinese means the way, the great way. T-E is the term that means the application of or the virtue of. And Ching in ancient Chinese means book. So it's the book for applying the virtue of living the way. That's what this book means. And he told me that, and I thought, I've heard of the Tao Te Ching. I've heard of Taoism. I'm familiar with that. I had read about it when I was in college. I'd even lectured a little bit about it when I was teaching at a university in New York City, at St. John's University. It was something that I had sort of a cursory awareness of. But it wasn't something that I was really profoundly interested in. I was watching a TV show one night, and someone talked about the Tao on there. I walk into a bookstore, and there's a copy of the Tao. This is all happening in the 6 months or so that between when I had left, and knowing that it was time for me to detach myself from all of the things that had been so much a part of my life and move on into a new area of my life. So I couldn't resist it any longer. And I said, I really want to read the Tao, and I'm going to take the next year, a full year. And in that year, what I would like to do is I would like to read each verse. There are 81 verses in the Tao Te Ching. You can read it in an afternoon, but you can study it for a lifetime. And in the studying of this, I said, I would like to just take those 365 days for the next year, and in every 4 days, I'm going to read one verse. Some of them are only 4 lines long. Some of them are 12, 16 lines long. I'm going to create for myself a way of seeing if I can live this Tao. And what I did was I would read it, and I would meditate on it. I would walk on it. I would go swim on it. When I would do yoga, I would practice it. And then I would sit down after the fourth day, and I had a picture of the man who was considered to be the author of this, although there's no historical actual record of his name is Lao Tzu. This is the image that I looked at. This is the image of an artist's drawing of Lao Tzu. In ancient Chinese means old man, old man. He was the old man who was living in China in the time of the warring states, and he decided he didn't want any more to do with war and violence and hatred and killing and all of the things that were so much a part of his world. And he got on his oxen, and he left. And before he left to go off and be by himself, he dictated some 5,000 Chinese characters, these 81 verses that became the Tao Te Ching. There are some people who call the Tao Te Ching the wisest book ever written. If you Google this thing called the Tao Te Ching, you'll come up with over 1,300,000 hits on the Tao Te Ching. Not only that, there are 14,000 translations of the Tao Te Ching that I have come across. So what I did is I took 10 of those translations, the ones that seem to be the most relevant, the ones that seem to have the most meaning to those people who lived in this part of the Western world, and I combined them into what I consider to be the most useful translation of the Tao Te Ching. And each morning I would get up and I would look at this picture and I would ask, what is it that you would say to the people who are living now at this time, given the conditions that we have in our life right here? What is it that you would do? Many people call this a manual for achieving a way of life that literally guarantees integrity, joy, peace, and balance in our lives. Now, there was a man who was a contemporary of Lao Tzu. His name was Confucius. He was many years younger than Lao Tzu, but he kept hearing about this old man who had all of this great wisdom. And one day, he decided that he was going to go, legend says, and visit Lao Tzu. And he spent a full day listening to this man, because Confucius was someone in China who was trying to lay down all the rules of etiquette and how to conduct yourself and trying to dictate to the people what they should be. Lao Tzu had nothing to do with any of that. And when he went to see Lao Tzu, he came back and he talked to all of his people. And this is what he said. He said, of birds, I know they have wings to fly with. Of fish, that they have fins to swim with. Of wild beasts to run with. For feet, there are traps. For fins, there are nets. For wings, arrows. But who knows how dragons surmount wind and cloud into heaven? This day, I have seen Lao Tzu, and he is a dragon. And there he is, a dragon. And a dragon in ancient Chinese was a picture of someone or something that was so mysterious and so difficult to comprehend because it could always be something else. There was a great teacher who came many years after that. His name was Rumi, who was a Jalaluddin Rumi, who was a great poet, a Persian poet in the 14th century. And he had a line. He said, "The day that you were born, a ladder was set up to help you to escape from this world." I believe that the Tao Te Ching and this thing that I have done, this change your thoughts, change your life effort that I spent one full year on every single day doing exactly what I just said, is a ladder that will help you to return. In the Tao, there's a very famous line. The 40th verse of the Tao says, "Returning is the motion of the Tao." Returning is the motion of the Tao. So that all of us came from a divine spiritual essence, invisible. Everything in the world of form emanated from something that is formless. There was a split second when you went from non-being to being. And what Lao Tzu was trying to teach was to be able to return to that from which you came and live your life from the spiritual perspective and become a God-realized being. Another great poet, T.S. Eliot, once said, "We shall not cease from exploration. And at the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time." For the first time. What I'm asking you to do and what Lao Tzu seemed to be saying was, learn to die while you're alive, because you will ultimately return. All of us have a return trip, a round trip ticket when we came in, didn't we? But if you could learn to die while you're alive, and there's a great story. I have to tell you this story. I want to read this story to you. It's a way to look at this idea of dying while you're alive. It goes like this. To die while we are alive gives us the only opportunity we will ever have to get outside of this package that houses us temporarily. There's an ancient parable that repeated generation after generation by the spiritual masters of India, which illustrates this point. Listen to this wonderful story. A traveler from India went to Africa to acquire some local products and animals, and while in the jungle, he saw thousands of beautiful, multicolored talking parrots. He decided to capture a talking parrot and take it back as his pet. At home, he kept his parrot in a cage, and he fed him, and he gave him wonderful seeds and honey and played music for his pet, and generally, he treated him very well. When it was time for the man to return to Africa 2 years later, he asked his parrot if there was any message that he could deliver to the parrot's friends who were back in the jungle. Well, the parrot told his master to say that he was very happy in his cage and that he was enjoying each day and to convey his love. Well, when the traveler arrived back in Africa, he delivered the message to the parrot back in the jungle. Just as he finished his story, a parrot with tears welling up in his eyes fell over dead. The man was alarmed, and he decided that the parrot must have been very close to the parrot in the cage and that this was probably the reason for the sadness and for his demise. When the traveler returned to India, he told his pet what had happened. As he finished his story, the pet parrot's eyes welled up with tears, and he kneeled over dead in his cage. The man was astounded, but he figured that his pet died from the despair of hearing of the death of his close friend back in the jungle. The trader opened up the cage and tossed the dead bird outside onto the trash heap. Immediately, the pet parrot flew up to a branch on the tree outside. The trader said to him, "But you're not dead after all. Why did you do that? You tripped me." And the parrot responded, "Because that bird back in Africa sent me a very important message." "What was the message?" the trader wanted to know. "He told me that if you want to escape from your cage, You must die while you're alive. We must indeed die while we are alive in order to be able to look back at our waking consciousness and see ourselves trapped in our cage, which in our case is our body. And then we will see how unnecessary it is to remain caged. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. Yeah, you can applaud. What I encourage you to do is to create for yourself a sacred space. And in this sacred space, I would like you to place everything that has energy value to you. Photograph. I have this photograph that I looked at every day for 1 year and began to talk to after a while. It's a little weird, but you begin to get this idea. And those of you who wonder why I am wearing no shoes, I'd like you to know that where I live, you never walk into a sacred space with your shoes on. It would be considered dishonorable to do so. And to me, this stage, this setting, this beautiful place, and this beautiful symbol is a sacred, sacred space. I live without shoes. I heard it said once that if you wear shoes everywhere you go, the whole earth will feel like leather. And it's nice to feel what the earth feels like and to feel that natural. So in that sacred space, you will feel the energy of the photographs, of any mementos that you have, of pictures of your children, of drawings, of statues, of anything at all that you can think of. I have a beautiful sacred space, and it calls me. And as it calls me, when I go into that place that is so profoundly sacred to me, the most beautiful things begin to happen for me, particularly in the middle of the night when no one else is up and I feel closest to God and I feel closest to this beautiful old man who sent so many important messages to me through his Tao Te Ching and in my meditations to help me to create this program, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, Living the Wisdom of the Tao. What I would like to do now is to
BLG Days at Cons are here. We are
to look at some of the key thoughts that I would like you to think about and consider changing as you become a person who becomes more God realized, that is, someone who has died but stayed alive and returned and went back on that return trip. The first of these thoughts to change is to change the idea that I can't trust in my own nature. Two, I trust in my own nature. Did it ever occur to you that you have a nature? That nature is so profound and is always calling you. You know it. No one else can know it. No one else can impose it on you. No one else can tell you what it is that you feel in here that you know is why you're here and what you're doing here. There's no one else can explain that or explore that with you. You can't share it. Everything in the universe has a nature. Your dog has a nature. A crocodile has a nature. A duck has a nature. A crow has a nature. Everything has its nature. Everything has a dharma, including you. But what we've learned and we've grown up to believe is that I can't trust in that nature. My nature, to trust in your nature, to know that you came from a divine place of well-being, and to trust in it. Listen to this, verse 38 of the Tao, a few lines. The great master follows his own nature and not the trappings of life. A truly good man is not aware of his goodness and is therefore good. Think about yourself, the first moment of life, the very first moment, that speck when you went from nowhere, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, to now here, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, from nowhere to now here. Same thing, just a little question of spacing, just a little different spacing, all right? So you went from nowhere, now you're in now here, and where do you think you're going? Nowhere. Right? Back to nowhere. Who out there watching, who in this audience isn't going back to nowhere? That's where we're all headed, back to nowhere. So in that split second, then you lived inside your mother's womb for 9 months. And in that nine-month period of time, you trusted your nature. You didn't have a sonogram and say, my God, I don't have a nose. Very scary. What if it doesn't show up on time? Or you didn't do any of that. You trusted completely in your own nature, right? And so did your mother. There's very little that you can do, because what you were to become, everything that this physical body needed, was all handled in there. And also, beyond what was needed for your physical world and what Lao Tzu called the world of the 10,000 things, the 10,000 things. There's 10 zillion things, obviously, in the physical world, but that's how he named it, the world of the 10,000 things. And in that world of the 10,000 things, everything returns back to its source. But while you're in that place, and why wouldn't you believe, even maybe for a second, that not only was my physiology all handled for me, but everything else that I needed, if I could just stop interfering with it and stop other people from doing it, that everything I needed, and that's a big part of understanding, change your thoughts, change your life. It's a big part of that. The idea that I have a nature that I can trust, not something that I have to be afraid of, and I can stop letting other people interfere with it as well. So what happens? We go through those 9 months, totally uninterrupted. We have no questions. Everything works out. And then what? We say the very first thing, we pop out after 9 months, we'll take over from here. That was good work. Nice work, God. Thank you very much. And so what we'll do is just sort of edge you out of here, you know. So we edge God out. We take on an ego, E-G-O. And we edge out and we say, we'll take over. And we have an ego. And this ego, what this ego does is it takes on a set of beliefs. And these beliefs are that I am what I have, that I am what I do, that I am what other people think of me. So we're raised to believe that the more stuff I accumulate, the more things that I get, this is who I am. The more that people like me, this is what I'll get. And on it goes. I want to tell you a story. The story of one of my children. Her name is Tracy. We lived in Detroit when she was born. She came in as a little rebellious. She came in the middle of the Detroit riot when they said, nobody is allowed to go out. Anybody that goes out is going to be arrested. And she said, this is a good time for me to show up. That's exactly what she did. So when she showed up, after about the second or third year, Tracy went to preschool. And she came home from preschool. She was about three. And in that time, she came home and she said, he handed me a paper, and it had a gold star at the top of the paper. And I looked at it, and I said, and she said, Daddy, I got a gold star, I got a gold star. I said, I'm not really interested in gold stars. I said, but what are you doing? What is this? She said, well, we did something in school called adding, and I got them all right, and I know how to. I said, adding? I can't believe you're three. You can't learn to add when you're three. And I went through this whole long thing about adding and how terrific it was. And she kept saying, Daddy, the gold star, excuse me, but I was the only one in the class that got a gold star. I got them all right. I said, you know, Tracy, I said, honey, that some people just need to have gold stars. And teachers sort of like to give it out and make that the reason why you're doing something, I said, and set you apart from everybody else. I said, your dad doesn't really care much about that and how you stack up with others. And they're going to be, I'm more interested in what you're learning. And she said, okay, she was used to that. She had a weird daddy. And she knew that. So about another month or so, she came home with a paper that had looked like it had had a gold star on it, but it had obviously been taken off. Her little thumbprints were all over the place that had been a gold star. It was taken off. And I said, what's this? Oh, she said, we're now doing subtraction. And I said, subtraction? That's amazing. And I took over by her dresser. I said, you know that money you've got in your picture? I put it in my pocket. I said, that's called subtraction. Isn't that right? And she said, give me that money back. And we talked about subtraction. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I said, honey, what happened? What was this? What was there at the paper? And she said, oh, she said that. She said, the teacher gave me one of those gold stars. I said, really? I said, well, what happened to it? Oh, she said, I took it off. I said, well, what'd you do with it? She said, I gave it back to her. I said, well, what did you tell her? She said, oh, I told her to give it to someone who needs that sort of thing. Right. Yeah. And there she is. She's standing right here. She's going to be 40 this year, my daughter Tracy. So what we have to do is learn how to ego of ours, this part of us that believes that who we are is what we have and what we do and what other people think of us. But remember, if you grow up believing that you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't. And if you believe that you are what you have, when it's gone, you aren't. And if you believe that you are what other people think of you, your reputation, which we raise people to believe, I have to be concerned with what other people think of me. Take this ego and retrain it. And one of the ways that you do to retrain it is, first, you take this idea that the ego has of fear. What are you afraid of? Anybody out there, what are you afraid of? Shift from fear to curiosity. Become curious about what you're afraid of. That's what Lao Tzu taught me. You're afraid of snakes. You're afraid of disapproval. You're afraid. Shift from fear and say, I'm going to become more curious about what I'm afraid of. And then take all of the things that you're attached to, like all of your photographs, like all of your furniture, like all of your clothing, like all of the stuff that you find so much attachment to, and start letting it go. Start letting it go. You know, the day that I turned that key on May the 11th in 2006, I didn't even know where it was going. I just knew there was a shift taking place. I felt freer than I'd ever felt, I think, in my life. In my mid-60s, out there on a whole new adventure. And here we are talking about it on national television, on PBS. Take that idea that you have to be attached to things and know that you came in with nothing, with no thing. And you're going to leave with nothing, with no thing. And understand that your life is a parenthesis in eternity. Live there without attachment. And then take your need to be in control of yourself, of others, of the situation, and shift from control to trust. Begin to have a trust. Lao Tzu is profound about this. In each one of the 81 verses, it comes up about 60 times as you look at letting go and letting God, allowing yourself to trust in your nature, allowing yourself to no longer believe that everything has to be controlled by me, and that other people no longer have to be in control of me as well. Begin to trust. Just like you did for the first 9 months. You trusted. Your nose showed up. Your height showed up. Your eyes showed up. Whatever. It all showed up. It's all perfect. It's all divine. So why not wander through your life and have this wonderful, peaceful knowing that it's all fine? And finally, shift from your sense of entitlement. Nobody can treat me that way. I'm entitled to have this. Well, I paid for that. Let go. I mean, back in 1 year, I let go of all of my entitlements. I don't feel I'm entitled to anything. I'm just here. Shift from entitlement to radical humility. Lao Tzu speaks about it so often. Stay humble. Stay low. The greatest leaders are the ones.
You know, that's amazing what he's saying about the entitlement, because me and a friend were having a conversation just this rising about ownership. You know what I'm saying? My wife, my husband, my this, my that. You know, and people are starting to, I love it, because people are starting to say, wait, you know, because relationships should not be about ownership. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Wow. And at the end of the day, in one of the verses of the Tao, it says, the people will say, we did it ourselves. We did it ourselves. In verse 49 of the Tao Te Ching, here's an exact quote. The sage is kind to the kind and kind to the unkind because the nature of his being is kindness. And also, be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. You know what I do? Just before I did this program, I have to admit I was nervous. I was humbled by it. But who are you, Wayne Dyer? Who are you to read the Tao and believe that you can interpret it on television and interpret it in a book and spend a year and I got real humble with that. And you know what I say? Tao, which is just another word for God or Source or Krishna or Allah or whatever you want to call it, guide me. Guide me now. I have that awareness before I come out. If you knew, says in the Course in Miracles, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again. I remember Mother Teresa saying to a dear friend of mine who was asking, what could he do? What could he do to do something for her? He was, his name was Pat McMahon. He was on KTR Radio in Phoenix. And finally, Mother Teresa said to him, you can do something for me. She said, tomorrow morning, get up at 4 a.m. and go out onto the streets of Phoenix and find someone who's living there who believes that he's alone and convince them that he's not. That's what you can do. That's how saints talk. That's how Lao Tzu spoke. Okay, let's go on to the next thought, the change. So you're changing from not trusting in your nature to trusting in your nature. You change your thought from I need more to what I call living contentment. What is this thing about more? It's the mantra of the ego, isn't it? I have to have more. I have to collect more stuff. I have to have more friends. I have to have more money. It's more, 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 more. When where you came from nowhere. You don't need anything. It's a continuous bombardment that we are all exposed to in this whole world of believing that we have to have more. One of the reasons why I love public television so much, you don't see ads on PBS. You don't have to be constantly exposed to the idea that you have to have more and you have to get more, and if you don't have this, then you're not complete and so on. So we get bombarded with this idea of attracting more. And Lao Tzu says, live contentment. Live in a state of being contented. Here's verse 81, the last verse of the Tao Te Ching, my favorite translation of it, and I put it right into the book. Sages do not accumulate anything, but give everything to others. Having more, the more they give. It's a great lesson. My son, Sam, we're very, very close. We just spent a couple of months together over in Maui, just being together, just being. It was a divine time. And he came home with, this last summer, he came home with four T-shirts that he loved. And I said, well, honey, I said, which one do you like the best? He said, well, that one over there, that blue one, it's got the writing, and it's got the drawing, and it's got the surfer. And kind of, I said, that's great. I said, I'd like to have that one. He said, no, Dad, that's my favorite. That's the one I like the best. I said, I know. I said, that's the one. Would you mind if I had that one? He said, I would mind a lot if you had that one. He said, maybe you can have one. I'm not so crazy about this one over here. I said, so you're going to give me something you don't like. You know, I said, that's the one. I love that because we have the same taste. Could I have that one? He said, Dad, you're crazy. He said, you can't have my favorite T-shirt. I said, well, I want you to think about that. I want you to think about detaching and letting go and not needing to have more. And he's heard me talk about this stuff his entire life. So finally, he just, you know, I went in and I tried it on. And I said, this thing looks so great. Looking in the mirror. You know, he said, Dad, that really is mine. I said, yeah. I said, but you're going to give it to me. He said, no. I said, yeah, well, just think about it, you know, because I'm your dad, and I'd really like to have this. And so he reluctantly parted with it. And so that evening, I was still wearing the shirt, and he looked at me, and he said, oh, that's my shirt. I said, you know, fans, I said, you gave me the shirt. I said, I'm going to wear this shirt until you are happy that I have your favorite shirt. I'm never going to take it off until you are happy. He said, well, you'll be wearing that shirt a long time. I said, well, that's okay. So I wore it the next day. I got up. I slept in it that night. I got up the next day. I got up the next morning. I put it on, and my fans would come in, and he'd look at me like, oh, you're still not happy that you gave me something that you really love. Because this is what it really means to be a sage. This is what it means to be a divine being. To be someone who's willing to depart with not the things they don't like, but what they do like. I wore it the next day. I wore it the next day. I wore it for 2 weeks. Take it off only to wash it, put it right back on. 2 solid weeks. He's one of my children will tell you. Finally, one day he said, Dad, I'm so happy. I am so thrilled that you have that T-shirt. I said, oh, that's great. I can finally take this thing off. I'm going to just give it away. But it's like, what a great lesson in that. The idea that you take, you know, there's a rule. It's called the 80-20 rule. And in the 80-20 rule, it says everything that you have, all of your stuff, 20% of it is what you use. All of your clothes in your closet, 20%. You just keep using the same 20% over and over. 80% of the clothing that you have in your closet for so many people is something that you never use. You don't wear. You look at it, you store it, you think, well, there might come a day. Oh, I can't part with that, even though you've been carting it around. Every time you move it and you put it. Take the 80% that you don't use and give it away. Give it away. Lao Tzu says that when your cup is full, stop pouring. When your cup is full, stop pouring. We have an obesity crisis in the United States, in the Western world. The obesity crisis can be handled. You just read the Tao. If you realize, in verse 33, it says, if you realize you have enough, you are truly rich. If you could just learn something called portion control, where you just take a bite and you say, is my cup full? Stop pouring. Stop pouring. In other words, instead of filling yourself with that which is already a surplus, in the Tao it teaches us to take surpluses and to reduce them and to take deficiencies and increase them so that we create balance in our lives, to be in balance. You can take the jewelry that you don't use. You can take the clothing. And then once you've given away the 80% that you don't use, take one of the things that you really like. And practice giving that away. It's such a wonderful way. Listen to this poem. It was written by a great Persian poet named Hafiz. It says, even after all this time, never says to the earth, you owe me. Just look what happens with a love like that. It lights up the whole sky. It lights up the whole sky. There's no always. There's no always. You don't have to. You can practice living a state of contentment. This was so powerful for me. You just can't imagine how good it felt for one entire year to walk through every day and say, I'm content. I'm content. I start out every morning of my life. The first words, Hafiz says, if there's only one prayer that you say every day, make it thank you. Just say thank you. That's how I start. Wake up. Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you, Source. Thank you, Tao. Whatever you want.
And those who know me know that each day, I promise you, I've been doing it for about 5 years. Each rising, you know, I always say, thank you for the bad shit. You know what I'm saying? The shit that we don't like. The shit that's uncomfortable. You know, thank you, thank you, thank you. It goes a long way, guys. So,
good call. The opening line of the Tao says, the Tao that can be named is not the Tao. As soon as you put a name on it, it dissolves. There's no name for it. It's just endlessly, invisibly, constantly in a state of creating, out of a state of love. The next thought that the Tao teaches us to change. Change your thoughts. Change your life. You really do. See, so much of the previous PBS specials that I've done on inspiration and intention, these were teaching people generically how to think differently. What Lao Tzu taught me was what to specifically think in place of thinking back. Instead of thinking that I don't trust my nature, he said, trust your nature. Instead of saying, I need more, he said, you need less. More is less. That comes right out of the Tao. Next thought. Move from thinking in a rigid way to thinking and being flexible, soft, and allowing. From rigidity to softness. What a wonderful transformation that is. I was standing
looking at with my son Sam, and we were on Maui, and we were looking at water. As water was going against some rocks and some cliffs and so on, and in these pictures, in this moment, I said to my son, I said, which do you think is stronger, the water or the cliff, the water or the rock? Which one do you think is more powerful and stronger? And he said, well, he said, the rocks, obviously, they're stronger and they're bigger and all. I said, but I said, water is very, very patient, isn't it? How much chance do those rocks have if they want to survive? I mean, what chance do they have? That would, and Lao Tzu is speaking to us about understanding our nature by examining how nature works and then making it apply to our thoughts, so that a soft thought, a thought that isn't a rigid thought, a thought that doesn't say you have to be this way or you have to be that way, a thought that is not stiff, a thought that water, there are so many references to water and what we can learn from water. You're 75% water. The planet is 75% water. We are water. The rest of us is just muscled water. It's just, it's all water. And water is soft. Water can enter anywhere. You get into a conflict with somebody else, and you picture yourself as water. You can enter with water in any place that there's an opening. If you can visualize yourself as a being who moves into the space of water, if you can see yourself that way, you can just enter into those places and the people that you love and your children and your spouse and anyone at all, and enter there softly. Here's verse 8. The supreme good is water, which nourishes all things without trying to. And verse 78, right? Smack out of the Tao. Nothing in the world is softer and weaker than water. But for attacking the hard, the unyielding, nothing can surpass it. There is nothing like it. Here it is. I asked when they designed this set, this beautiful set, and thank you, designers, for this. I asked if I could have water on the stage. They did it. They figured it out. There's a Now, I'm going to try to get some of this water, okay? So you get down here and you just, I'm going to scoop this up. And okay, the tighter you hold it, the less chance you have of doing anything with it, isn't it? How can I experience water? The way to experience water is to just get soft, just get unbending. And there it is. That's what water is. The minute I grasp, the minute I try, and Lao Tzu is saying, the same thing is true in everything in your life. The more you grasp, the more you try to hold on to it, the more you try to be rigid with it, the less control you have of it. The softer you are, the less rigid you are, the more flexible you are as a person, the more you can accomplish. And this is a great way to practice in parenting as well. And this idea that a rigid thought, how many times have you heard this idea that if I tell you something, I'm going to stay consistent with it. We have a set of rules. These are the rules, and we'll do it this way. In the Tao, it says the more rules you make, the more rule breakers you create. It's true. The more rules you have in your house about how everything has to go. We had in our house, my wife would have a big jar of M&Ms, peanuts, you know, different, all these different multicolored ones. And the kids and our husbands, we didn't feed them sugar and we didn't give them sodas and stuff like that. So they, you know, they were just more like a decoration. Every once in a while someone would take them and they'd hardly ever be replaced. Now when we had kids come over to our house, we weren't ever allowed to have such horrible things. We should have seen their behavior. You know, they would scoop them up, they'd be putting them in their pockets, and they'd get their purses and they'd open it up. And, you know, the whole thing would be empty. I'd say, well, what are you doing? You mean you can just have these whenever you want them? Well, we don't really have any rules about that. It's just, it's not something that we encourage or discourage. It's just there. It's like Emerson had a wonderful line. He said, a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. A foolish consistency, a rigid consistency. So that there are many people who say, if I say it on Monday,
you can be absolutely certain that on Wednesday, I'm going to believe the same thing, regardless of what might happen on Tuesday. Now, Tuesday might have something real that you might want to be changing your mind. You might want to say, you know, I thought that this time, but now I've seen this, and now we can shift. And you can see how this can become when, and so much about the Tao is on leadership. Leadership in the family, leadership in the community, leadership geopolitically. Less rigidity, more openness, more willingness to listen and say, I changed my mind. Because a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And what I believe on Wednesday has changed because of what happened on Thursday. Now, another important thing to say to your children, to your friends, to your lover, to your spouses, to whomever, to the people you work with, words that we're so terrified to say, but which give us a sense of living with the Tao. I don't know. I don't know. I'll look it up. Say it. I don't know. Doesn't hurt. Say it again. I don't know. Isn't it fearful? I mean, so many people, and it's like very freeing, because my kids call, ask me something, and I said, I don't know. They said, Dad, you know everything. You know everything. I said, well, I don't know that. Mm-hmm. I'll look it up, or we'll try to find an answer to that. But I don't quite know. I know that I spent 20 years running, and I ran every day for 20 years, for 22 years, without missing a day. 8 miles. Never missed a day. That's rigid. All right. Some call that obsessive. But you brush your teeth every day, I used to say, and you don't call that obsessive. You go to the bathroom every day, and you don't say, well, he's obsessively doing that again today. You don't do that. But anyway, what I learned is that even in the world of exercise, there are certain things that are built in to make us rigid, to make us stiff, to make us hard. And we lift, and we run, and we kick, and working out. There's another kind of working out that is ancient. It goes back to the time of Lao Tzu and before, which is called yoga. And yoga means union. It means union with your source. And when you do yoga, you can stay in the same place. You can do the equivalent of 8 miles. When I used to run 8 miles, I had to run 4 miles that way, turn around 4 miles back. And I'd be sweating. Now I can do yoga, and I can just stand in one place within 90 minutes by being supple and making myself stretch, by not being hard and rigid. I can, I can get that out there. I can get that leg up. I can do these kinds of things. And 90 minutes later, it's like I'm totally sweating, and I feel so different. I used to, when I would go out at night to eat or something, after running so many miles, running marathons and doing those things, I'd go to get up, and I would be, okay. It's going to take a little while. That doesn't happen anymore because I've given up hard. I've given up being rigid and substituted it for being supple, for being flexible, living a life in which I don't have to always be fulfilled. Listen to this verse of the Tao Te Ching, one of my all-time favorites, verse number 76. A man is born gentle and weak. At his death, he becomes hard and stiff. All things, including the grass and the trees, are soft and pliable in life, dry and brittle in death. Stiffness is thus a companion in death. Flexibility is a companion in life. And it's not just for how you exercise, it's how you think, how you think. In front of my place on Maui, there is a beautiful set of 11 or 12 palm trees. And these are like 30, 40, 50 feet tall. They've been there for, I don't know how long, decades. And when the winds come and when the storms come, the storms will blow them over the area I watch. And there's just these amazing, elastic things. I learned so much from these things. I go out there, when I wrote the essay in the book on the verse 73, I just went out there with the palm trees, and I was just communed with these palm trees, and they go all the way up, and then they come all the way back. That's a symbol for how we need to think in our own lives. In verse 73, it says, it is heaven's way to conquer without striving. It does not ask, yet it is supplied with all that it needs. It does not hurry, yet it completes everything on time. One of my favorite lines from the Tao, one of my favorite beliefs from the Tao is this, that you're doing nothing. All of you, you're doing nothing. You're just being done. Just like you were the first 9 months of your life, you think you're out there and you're making this happen and you're making that happen and you've got all these rigid things and you have to apply your life this way. You're not doing anything any more than you were having your fingernails peel up when they were supposed to. And look at you. Look at all of you. Look around. You know, it's like, you know, what held it in yesterday? I'm not doing anything. They fall out and they don't fall out. No matter how hard I try to keep them in there, finally my kids said, give it up. Give it up. So I was over in England and they told me that I couldn't take my shampoo bottle on the plane. And there's nothing you can do about it. Yes, there is. I'll just shave my head. I no longer need shampoo. Okay. So we want to move from stiffness to flexibility. The next thought that I'd like to see us change that the Tao taught me so much is living by interfering, to shift that to living by not interfering. You know that every one of your children have the anchor of the universe located within them? And that Khalil Gibran, this is a paraphrase, he said, your children are not your children. They are the products of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not for you. They're not there for you. So what are you doing interfering in their life? Now, I'm not talking about letting them play out in the traffic or play at the edge of a swimming pool if they don't know how to swim. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about, I called this when I was working on this and living this and practicing this for that full year of 2006, the bite your tongue, zip your lips verses of the Tao. Verse 29 of the Tao. Do you think you can take over the universe and improve it? I do not believe it can be done. Everything under heaven is a sacred vessel and cannot be controlled. Trying to control leads to ruin. Trying to grasp, we lose. Allow your life to unfold naturally. Allow other people's lives to unfold naturally as well. We have parents, and I see them a lot. They're called helicopter parents because they're always hovering. They're hovering over their kids, and they're telling them what to do and what not to do. And my son came over from England, my son Shane, and he was going to get ready to go to college in America. And my wife said to me, so you're going to take him and show him about registration, right? I said, oh, yeah, I'll be doing that. She said, well, make sure that you help him because he doesn't know have any idea how to register at the school, this great big school with thousands of people. Yeah. And I do, right? I would know how to register kids at school, you know. And so Shane got in the car, and I said, it's all going to be fine. You all be fine. And we drive over to the campus, and I drop him off, and I have my tennis racket in the back. And he said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm a prophet. I said, I get paid by the thought. And, I have a tennis mat, and then I have to walk on the beach so that I get paid by the thought. He said, but what about the registration? I said, well, the registration, I said, you'll do a lot like I did when I learned to register. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, you'll just go up to the people and say, where is registration? And they'll say, it's over there where all those people are all lined up. If I remember those days, in the college of 40,000 students or so, finding out how to register. Tracy, did I take you to register, honey? No. So he said, you mean you're just going? I said, yeah, you just go. I said, you want daddy to walk with you over and take you to graduate? You're 18 years old and you want daddy to register you? He said, oh, no, I wouldn't want that. So we got home at the end of the evening when I got back home, and
my wife had said to me, she said, did you help Shane at registration? Oh, I said, I gave him so much help. Probably the most help he ever had in his life. I taught him how to do things for himself. And so that I wouldn't have to be interfering and hovering over and figuring it all out for them. My children know that when their science project comes up, that I'm there for consultation, but I passed science. I got through that myself. And you'll be doing your own science project. If I can help you, I'd be happy to help you, but I'm not going to be getting the glue and figuring out how to make a time clock and all that. I said, you know, just look at a clock. That's how you tell time for me, whatever it might be. And it's not an uncaring, and it's not a callous attitude at all. It's an awareness that your children have the anchor of the universe located within them. That's what Lao Tzu said. Now, my dear friend, who I love so much, she's right here in the audience, Carrie, right there, Carrie Evans from Mali. She has two beautiful little daughters, and she asked me if I would watch them one afternoon when my grandson, Carter, was visiting. I said, I'd be happy to watch them. She said, but you don't understand. I mean, they're gonna do this and they're going to do that. I said, you just go off. And she was studying for an exam. I said, you go study. Do whatever you have to do. I can handle three little kids out at the swimming pool for 3 or 4 hours. I can handle that. So she went off very nervous, gave me lists, told me what to do, what they might say, what they might not say. And then she said, now, Kylie says this. You tell Kylie. And if Kamiley says this, Kylie, Kamiley, and Carter. All right? So they go out there, and right here, there's a little pool over here, a little swimming pool. And I watch them over in the swimming pool, and Kylie takes the water and splashes my grandson, Carter, and splashes Kamiley, and Kamiley comes over to me and runs over within 2 minutes, says, Kylie splashed me. Well, of course, I'm working on the dock. Not interfering. And I said, splashing, honey, is in the way of things. When you're near water, splashing will take place. She said, yeah, but she splashed me. I said, you'll probably work this out. This will all be fine. And she stood there for the longest time with her little lips and so on, and finally she realized she wasn't getting anywhere with me. She went back. Before you know it, one of them had taken, now Kylie and Kamiley are teaming up against Carter. And they pushed him under or whatever. Now, one of them is 5, and one of them is 4, and one of them is 7 or 8. And Carter comes running over as fast as he can. Runs over. He calls me Bompa. I'm Grandpa. Bompa. 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 Miley pushed me underwater. I said, Carter, I'm a Dallas master. But Bompa, you pushed me. She put me underwater. I said, you'll just have to work this one out, Carter. I'm a Dallas master. This went on all for the first hour or so. But I noticed as I was less interfering and less interfering that they were working it out. They tried again after a few times. They'd come over and they wanted this and they wanted to push and whatever. But each time when I let them know that I was watching and making sure they were safe, but I wasn't going to interfere. I wasn't going to resolve it. I wasn't going to settle their disputes for them. I wasn't going to be a helicopter parent, even for an afternoon. And the way that it resolved itself was they have the anchor of the universe within them. They have a nature. They know what to do. One of my favorite things always to say to my children when there's a conflict is, you know what the right thing to do is. What do you think? You know. You have it in your heart. You are a divine being. They all know that. I've said those words to them over and over again. You'll figure it out. You'll work it out. Now that not I'm going to interfere, I'm going to tell them what to do. You can practice this so many places, so many ways in your life, particularly as parents, even in business. It's very important in business is to allow the people to say at the end of the day, right out of the Tao, oh, we did that ourselves. We did it ourselves. In the Tao, it says, there's a time for everything, and everything in its time. There's a time for everything. Listen to this. There's a time for being ahead and a time for being at peace. There's a time for being in motion and a time for being at rest. There's a time for being vigorous and a time for being exhausted. And in the Bible, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under the sun.
I practice. This was so helpful to me, particularly as I do my yoga practice. In my yoga practice, it's there are some very exhausting postures. I do this Bikram hot yoga, all right? So it's 105 or between 105 and 110 for 90 minutes. And there's one that I used to hate. It's called triangle, you know? And so you put your foot out here, and then you do this, and then you get yourself up, and you go all the way down, and you get yourself in balance, like here, so you balance, 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 and you take your arms out here, and then you take these like this, and it's 105 degrees, and then you take one, and you're looking up here at your arm, you're looking, and then you bring it back, and it lasts a full minute. And I used to just wait for that minute to be over, like that. When are they going to bring me on this posture? It was so exhausted. I started practicing what the Tao teaches, and I remembered there's a time for being exhausted. There's a time for that. And as I practice that, I said, and there's a time for being at rest. And it's coming, hopefully soon. But in your life, there's an awareness that there is a time for all the things that go on that you think shouldn't be happening. In the Tao, it says that hidden in all misfortune is good fortune. Hidden in the misfortune that you have is good fortune, because no storm can last forever. Even nature cannot create a storm that lasts forever. Ultimately, hidden within every storm is calmness. Hidden within every flood is drought and dryness. Hidden within all of the storms of your life is the peace that you desire. And it leans on you if you stop telling yourself and just let yourself go with it, to be at harmony with it, rather than trying. You can see why this is called the wisest book ever written, and we're just touching on it here, just touching on this. Lao Tzu was green before Al Gore. He was. This is verse 39 of the Tao Te Ching. When man interferes with the Tao, the sky becomes filthy, the earth becomes depleted, the equilibrium crumbles, creatures become extinct, therefore nobility is rooted in humility. Finally, I'd like to say to you, in understanding this idea of the Tao, is to take time yourself for being in nature. Take an hour a day, every day of your life, take an hour a day, no matter how busy you are, no matter what scheduling that you have, to get out in nature. Walk barefoot on the grass. It's one of the great ways to overcome an inability to sleep at night. Just go out when you can't sleep and just walk on the grass, walk on the earth, and reconnect yourself. Now, go out and be with the tree and look at what you can learn from nature. Look at these trees. Look at these animals. You can study. Look at that. Look at it. You can study a flower like that, but it's so magnificent as it's unfolding. That's an actual photograph of this thing growing and unfolding there. So be with that. You have much to learn from nature, from water, from the sky, from the wind, from the trees, from the birds. The more you do it, the more you see yourself in all of them, the more you'll feel yourself as a connected being, living the Tao. Another thought, to change from thinking big to thinking small. It's so much of the Tao has in it statement that seems so paradoxical and so confusing to us. More is less. Less is more. Think small and get great things done. Accomplish great things. Listen to verse 64 of the Tao Te Ching. A tree that fills a man's embrace grows from a seedling. A tower 9 stories high starts with one brick. And here's the most famous line out of the Tao. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with what? One first step. Okay? So today I can stand up here on this stage in this beautiful sacred place, in this beautiful yin yang symbol, on this incredibly beautiful set that feels so much like nature. And I can say to you that in a very short time this year, I will have completed 20 years
without taking a drink of alcohol once a year. Okay? Thank you. Now, that's big. That's big. Because I drank every day. Not to get drunk, but I drank every day. 2 or 3 beers every evening after running, and it was like, and I couldn't remember a day when I hadn't had, I thought back 10 years, well, I couldn't think of a day, not one day in the previous decade or two that I had not had a beer or several beers. So that's big. And if I would have tried, if I'd have said to myself 20 years ago, Wayne, you're going to quit drinking for the next 20 years, I would have gone immediately and had a drink. Because it's just too big, isn't it? It's just too big. You don't do big things. You do small things and thus accomplish great things. It's a very important distinction to make. Whatever it is that you would like to create or contribute or become in your life, take one step. How did I let drinking go for 20 years? And I don't even know about tomorrow. I never think about tomorrow and whether I'm going to have a drink. All I know for sure won't be the day. I do it one day at a time. That's how you overcome anything called an addiction in your life. You take it, you reconnect yourself to the source from which you came, which is a source of what? Well-being, isn't it? And you get back and return, get on the return trip and say, I am connected to well-being. And I'll do this one day, 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second, if I have to, at a time. And when you do it, I mean, it's behind in all of the programs for overcoming addiction, and all of this work of Bill W., all of the work of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of the work of any kind of addictions. It isn't just alcohol. It can be food. It can be addiction to your email. It can be addiction to work. It can be addiction to so many things that so many people find that they can't get past, and to move themselves into a place where I think small. I ran 7 marathons in my running years. And about the 22nd or 23rd mile, you begin to ask yourself about your sanity. And what am I doing here? And my body is breaking down. But the way that you finish the marathon is not by saying, I'm going to run 26 miles. You don't do that, especially when you still got 5 or 6 to go. You just say to yourself, can I put my foot in front of the next one? Can I take one step at a time? Can I do it one step at a time? And before you know it, you've accomplished great things. I watched my wife give birth to 4 children in right there in her in the delivery room with her. And she does not, you know, when you have a baby, it takes 9 months, doesn't it? You don't say to yourself, oh my God, I gotta have a baby, I gotta get pregnant, I gotta deliver, I gotta go through labor, because that's just like, there are people who do that, and it's a torture for them. But I watched her do it one moment at a time in labor, not what's going to happen an hour from now, what's going to happen fast, you know, am I going to have to have the, none of that. And she did it all naturally because it was always, and her mind was so strong as she was doing it that I couldn't even penetrate. I couldn't even communicate with her. She was so focused on just being here. She would say, these are not labor pains. These are just signals. Just signals. And I can take this signal. I can do this for 1 minute. I can do this. It's the way everything gets done. I watch the great tennis players on the planet, Roger Federer, Pete Sampras, these people that are really masters at this game that I've played for so many years, not even close to that kind of level. And they'll be in a tournament, they'll have a seeding, and they'll say, here's the first round, here's the second round, here's the third round. There's no such thing as playing the fourth round before you played the first round. And then when you get to the first round, you don't have to go out there and say, well, I've got to treat this person in 3 sets. You say, I'm going to take 1 serve at a time. I'm going to take 1 point at a time. And every great athlete, I don't care who they are, they will always say, I can't think out there in big ways. I can only think small. Thinking small is what gets great things done. Verse 63. Achieve greatness in little things. Take on difficulties while they are still easy. Do great things while they are still small. The sage, one of my daughter's names, the sage, does not attempt anything very big and thus achieve greatness. Greatness comes from being in the moment, here, present, in the now. The sage confronts difficulties but never experiences them. This is the idea of thinking small. And finally, I'd like to see you change from this thought. Change from seeing yourself as separate to seeing yourself as connected to everyone and everything in the universe. Our ego tells us that we are separate, that who we are is this body that we have, and everybody out there is separate from me. Nothing has been more profound and more powerful and important for me than this verse of the Tao Te Ching. This idea that we are all one. All of us emanated from the same source. And by doing so, by emanating from the same source, we need to see ourselves as connected to every single being, every single person, every single flower, every single tree, every single animal. If you can see yourself in everyone, we're all connected. It makes about as much sense to me to have a smoking section in a restaurant as it does to have a peeing section in a swimming pool, right? Oh, no, kids. No. Don't pee over here. We pee over here. Does that make any sense? The Native Americans, one of my favorite quotes, I've used it many, many times. The Native Americans would say, no tree has branches so foolish as to fight among themselves. No tree has branches so foolish as to fight among themselves. We are all branches on a tree called humanity. When you read the Tao, when you read this idea about changing these thoughts and changing your life, you're going to see endless verses that speak to the absurdity of the idea of you having an enemy. The idea that you and anyone else on this planet is an enemy. In the Tao, it says, I and enemy cannot exist in the same sentence. And he said, even those who go to war, the ones who will triumph in war are those who go to war without an enemy. And they will treat every victory in war not as something to celebrate, but as a funeral, as an indication that we haven't reached the highest place within ourselves to see that even those people that we judge to be our enemy are really connected to us. And it says in the Tao that a bad man is a good man's job, and a good man is a bad man's teacher. A good man is a bad man's teacher. So finding that and seeing that, listen to verse 10, carrying body and soul and embracing the one, can you avoid separation? One who heeds this power brings the Tao to this very earth. This is the primal virtue. This was so helpful to me as I thought about it. Remember, I spent 4.5 days on each one of these verses. And in those, each one of those 4.5 days, I wasn't writing. I wrote the last 4 or 5 hours of those 4.5 days. For 4.5 days, I took that verse and I went out into the world and I looked at everyone that I encountered, everyone that I saw, and I tried to see myself in them. The person that was, you know, dressed differently than I would dress, the person who was not as attractive, the person who was very old, the person who was very young, the person who used language particularly that was possibly offensive, when I would look out there and I would practice not judging, Because the only difference between a flower and a weed is a judgment, isn't it? It's just a judgment. It's just a judgment. And if we want to end violence in our lives and in our society, we have to learn to change our thoughts. Remember the dandelions when I was growing up out in Michigan? We had these dandelions. The dandelion would have, at a certain time of the year, they would get all these little fuzz balls at the top of them, the yellow little flower part. I always liked the dandelions. I thought they were really beautiful. And then they have these little fuzz balls. Now imagine if you want to end the problem of dandelions on your lawn, and you see them all out there with all their little fuzz balls. So you go out there and you take a shovel and you turn it upside down and you start smacking all of the dandelions like this. And what do you do when you use violence to attempt to end the presence of these dandelions, which are problems for you on your lawn, is they all scatter. And then in the spring, guess what you got? You got more. You got new generations of dandelions. There's such a lesson in that, isn't there? There's a great lesson that when we use violence as a means to resolve our disputes, whether it's individually with each other or whether it's in countries or whether it's in communities, whenever it is that we resort to that kind of not seeing myself in others, and out of this kind of a consciousness will emerge those people who will ultimately begin to get this. Because if we don't get it, if we don't really get it, civilization as we know it will not survive. It will not survive. We have to learn that the people that we call enemies, no matter how horrendous they may behave toward us, there is still something of us in all of them. And we can figure out a way. Yes, we, of course, have to defend ourselves. And yes, we don't allow people to push us, all of those kinds of things. But at a deeper and a higher level, Lao Tzu was asking us to go within and find that place of peace and try to reach out to that and help someone to make a U-turn. Those people can be reached because they have the anchor of the universe located within them. In verse 25 of the Tao, it says, thus, to know humanity, understand earth. To know earth, understand heaven, which is where earth came from. To know the way, understand the great within yourself. Within yourself. Look without and see it. Now, every single person watching this program will have conflicts with somebody in their life on a fairly regular basis, especially if you're in a marriage or in a partnership of some kind. Certainly if you have children, you're going to have conflicts. Now think about what you do when you have a conflict and that conflict comes to an end. The conflict is over. You've expressed your opinion. David, you may have yelled at each other, you may have screamed at each other, you may not have understood each other, but it's over now. How do you end the conflict? Lao Tzu says, the person of Tao will eliminate all of the pain, all of the stress, all of the anger, all of the hatred, if they decide to end the conflict with love. Just be the one who ends the silence by saying, we don't agree, but I love you. You have moved a person from staying in the world of the 10,000 things into the world of God, into the world of Source, because the Source has no violence in it. It creates endless numbers of flowers and beings and creations without using any force at all. There's no force there. Here's one of my teachers who lived in Bombay, which is now Mumbai in India. His name was Nisargadatta Maharaj. He said, wisdom is knowing I am nothing. Love is knowing I am everything. And in between the two, my life moves. In between the two,
The ability to take a conflict and to end it with love is one of the most powerful things that you can do. It has been a great lesson for me. When we have a conflict, what we do is I will be the person that will pick up that phone. You can be certain of it. I will end that conflict with love. And guess what that does to the conflict? Over. It's over. You can't pick a fight with someone who just doesn't want to fight anymore, who just sends you love. So I want to summarize some of these thoughts, and there are so many. Change your thoughts based upon the wisdom of the Tao, and your life will change. There's many principles to live by in the Tao. First, remind yourself that there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. Bring happiness to all that you do. You accomplish much by trying less. It's so inconsistent, isn't it, with what we live in the Western world. But the less you try, when I go out and swim in the ocean, and I do it almost every day, I try to do between 30 and minutes and an hour every day, being out there in that ocean. And I just get out there, and if I try less, my arms just seem to know what to do, and the breathing just all works, and it's all, and I can swim all day. As soon as I try, as soon as I struggle, as soon as I try, the minute that I move myself into trying, it's like if I were to take this little cap here and drop it right there and say, I'm going to try to pick this up. I'm going to try to pick this up. This is what Lao Tzu was speaking about. So all of this, I'm really trying. All of this is called, in reality, not picking it up. That's what that's called, not picking it up. So when I just get easy and do less, see yourself, the Tao says, in everyone you encounter, a great lesson. Every single being, especially the ones that we read about who were told are our enemies, see yourself in them. Know that whoever they are, wherever they live, they want what we want. They want what I want. They want to be at peace. They don't want to be always struggling. They don't want to be sick. They just want to be loved, whoever they are. I know the skepticism of that. It's like, yes, but, all of the yes, but. But if they got it too, see, Lao Tzu wasn't speaking to, well, some are going to get this and some probably won't. He was speaking to all of us. Trust in others, the Tao says, to know what's best for themselves. Trust in that. Trust in the pliability, the flexibility of your baby. Yeah, those little babies, they're so great when they're like, you know, 2 weeks old. You can take their foot, put it behind their neck, stick it around here like this, put it in their mouth. They're so flexible. You can do anything. You pick them up, you turn them upside down. You watch them when they're starting to learn to walk. And they run, crash. They go down into the walls and all this. And you think, oh, my gosh, this kid will never walk again. Up they go, and they don't. Trust in their flexibility. Live without attachment and be generous. Be strong by bending. By bending. We need to learn this in our lives. We need to learn this in the world. It's not so important to be right. It's so much more important when you have a choice to be right or to be kind. Always pick kind. Always pick kind. Practice radical humility. Live low. Live low, like the ocean. Stay low, and all the streams will come to it. That's why it's so powerful, because it doesn't lord anything over anyone. And rather than looking for miracles, see everything as miraculous, everything in your life. There was a man who had a Tao experience, what I call a quantum moment. His name was John Newton. He lived back in the beginning of the 18th century. And he was crossing the ocean. He was a slave trader. He had a ship full of human cargo that he was going to trade into slavery. And the most hideous practice that was so common at that time in our history. And in the middle of a storm, on his way over there with all of these people, he was 22 years old, 23 years old. And he thought he was going to die. And he thought the whole, he must have hit a hurricane or something out there that was before satellites could warn people. And while he thought he was in that state of dying, he took out a pencil and a paper, and he wrote on the back of an envelope, he wrote, I once was lost, and now I'm found. And it was grace. It was grace that taught my heart to feel. It was grace that brought me home. And when the storm was over, he had a moment. He reconnected to his source. Anybody out there can reconnect to the source, to the Tao, and become a being of Tao. Remember, it's a return trip. And you can make that return trip while you're alive. Remember the parrot. He knows much more than we do. And he returned back to Africa, and he released the slaves, that it said. And for the next 55 years of his life, for the next 55 years of his life, he shifted and became the most ardent spokesman as an abolitionist to abolish that hideous practice of slavery. That what he devoted his life to it. A former slave, it's like going from Saul to Paul, you know, from being a person who crucifies and murders Christians to being the author of a big portion of the New Testament as St. Paul. In a moment, it's possible for any of us. I close this beautiful presentation on the Tao, Cecilia, with a poem that was written by a woman. Her name is Naomi Long Magid. From Detroit, went to Wayne State University. She was named the Poet Laureate of Detroit, an acclaimed African-American poet. Listen to these words. It sums up all that I've been saying. I wouldn't coax the plant if I were you. Such watchful nurturing may do it harm. Let the soil rest from so much digging. And wait until it's dry before you water it. The leaf's inclined to find its own direction. Give it a chance to seek the sunlight for itself. Much growth is stunted by too careful prodding, too eager tenderness. The things we love to leave alone. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Go and replay it. Send it to somebody that may need to hear it, you know. But it all starts with a thought, you know. We can change our thoughts to change our lives, to change our narrative, you know. We don't have to keep going on a negative narrative all the time. You know what I mean? It was growth. Excuse me. Many of us may have grown up, you know, in households where it was always negative and that's all we knew, that's all we saw. But you guys, we can, at any moment, we can begin to take our life back and we can begin to take our power back and we can change our thoughts to change our life. All right? All right, guys, if you need to contact me, please utilize all of the information in the show notes, my link tree. And, yeah, till next time, guys, please join me every weekend, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central. I'm on every weekend. That's the consistent schedule that I do have here. World Rising Information is something that I kind of randomly – I've been doing it every day, but I'm not going to commit to doing it every day. So if you want me in consistency, guys, please join me every weekend at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central on Enhancing Awareness Radio. All right, guys. Till next time, peace.
feel how gently it fades away. As you peacefully sit by the shore, mentally grab the notebook and pen from your bag. Open the notebook to a blank page and mentally begin to write. List all of the things that are the source of your pain and agony. Write of the things that have brought you hurt. Write of the things that have brought you shame. Write of the things that have brought you pain. Release the pain onto the page. Allow peace to rise and replace it. Release the pain onto the page. Allow peace to rise and replace. Notebook in hand, walk towards the ocean. Now, gently rip out the page of pain and fold it into the shape of a boat. On the side of the boat, small letters. I have let you go. I have let you go. Walk more towards the ocean. Feel the water at your feet. Continue to go. Love as it fades away.